Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is a particular honor for me because, let's face it, my presence on this stage is pretty unlikely. My father was a foreign student, born and raised in a small village in Kenya. He grew up herding goats, went to school in a tin roof shack. His father, my grandfather, was a cook.
Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. To learn how you can showcase your business or nonprofit, go to our website at TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. And once again, it is great to be with you. I'd like to also welcome my co-host to the show, Jima. Now, Jima is the director of training at TaylorMade Training and Consulting and the author of the Ask Jima blog. To check out her latest posts, go to askjema.blogspot.com. That's askjema.blogspot.com. And today, my very special guest is Larry Johnson. Now, Larry Johnson is a senior partner at the Covenant Advisors, where he helps clients manage their assets using Christian biblical principles to live life more abundantly. He is also the editor-in-chief at the Facts Life Group, which is an online magazine or e-zine at factslifegroup.com that promotes content to assist individuals and families in making sound life decisions. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And for those of you that are listening via Blog Talk Radio, leave your comments, click the follow button, or follow me on Twitter at TaylorMade101.com. But first, let's take a look at our current events. Now, this week, I want to continue the conversation on education. In particular, I want to kind of piggyback off of the president's State of the Union speech. Now, in the speech, he says, maintaining our leadership in research and technology is crucial to America's success. But if we want to win the future, if we want innovation to produce jobs in America and not overseas, then we also have to win the race to educate our kids. He says, think about it. Over the next 10 years, nearly half of all new jobs will require education that goes beyond a high school education. And yet, as many as a quarter of our students aren't even finishing high school. The quality of our math and science education lags behind many other nations. America has fallen to ninth in the proportion of young people with a college degree. And so the question is whether all of us as citizens and as parents are willing to do what's necessary to give every child a chance to succeed. That responsibility begins not in our classrooms, but in our homes and communities. It's family that first instills a love of learning in a child. Only parents can make sure the TV is turned off and homework gets done. We need to teach our kids that it's not just the winner of the Super Bowl who deserves to be celebrated, but the winner of the science fair. We need to teach them that success is not a function of fame or PR. Now, what's interesting is that I thought the president did a good job on his speech. And in fact, I had a long, drawn-out conversation about the actual speech in its entirety, as well as some of the things in his past performance, as well as some of the things in his vision for the country. Now, just in case you didn't have an opportunity to hear the audio about the speech, I'm going to go over a portion of the speech again. And basically, he was saying that our schools share this responsibility. When a child walks into a classroom, it should be a place of high expectations and high performance. But too many schools didn't meet this test. That's why instead of just pouring money into a system that's not working, we launched a competition called Race to the Top. And he go on to talk about in his speech, you know, how meaningful Race to the Top was and how it was going to replace the No Child Left Behind. Of course, he received a lot of applause for this. And so I want to kind of start the conversation off today with talking about the president's State of the Union speech, and then I want to move into the direction of the education portion. So when we return, we're going to take some calls. We're going to open up the phone lines, and we're going to speak with Az Jima and to talk a little bit about the president's speech. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook.
With Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, Tailor Made Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Az Jima, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, Tailor Made's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Okay, welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Before we take some calls, before we open up the phone lines here, I wanted to bring in Az Jima here to talk a little bit about the State of the Union address. And so, Jima, you with us?
I am.
Okay, so first and foremost, let's talk about, in general, what do you think of the President's State of the Union speech?
Well, I say in general, it was a well-crafted speech. I don't think he said anything. Well, he did say one thing I think caught people off guard when he mentioned about no earmarks. But I think other than that, it met the intent that a State of the Union does. It's supposed to lay out a foundation as to what his plans are as president, as commander-in-chief for the year. And then it's incumbent upon the members of Congress to follow suit and assist him in making those things happen. So I think in terms of the speech, we know he's a great speaker, and I think it connected well on so many levels. It was global. It was big. It wasn't specific, but I don't think the State of the Union is supposed to be specific.
So what if you had to take a part you liked and a part you didn't like about the speech, how would you delineate the two?
Well, I'm not sure if that was a part, anything I didn't like. It may have been some things I didn't quite understand or wish he may have expounded a little bit more, but I will say maybe I'll get that later, so I won't hold it against him for me not completely getting it then. I think one of the things I didn't really appreciate was the fact in terms of talking about education and the things we need to do as a country to get our students back to that level of high level functioning in terms of education. I thought that was great. But that's not where we're putting our money at. So hopefully Congress will do what they have to do to help them meet that goal of getting America back on top.
Right. So Jima, now right after the State of the Union speech, I had a very, very animated conversation with someone who I love and respect, but I couldn't get them to understand the gravity of the situation we were in and how the president has only, within the last, just 2 years now, he was able to pull us out of a dire situation, but for some reason I couldn't get them to understand that in the grand scheme of things, the president has done an amazing job, not just in order to save the country on a brink of pretty much bankruptcy, but also to be able to, legislatively. I mean, he's done a tremendous amount of work in that arena as well as economically as well. And so, you know, I'm not real sure, you know, how to get people to understand the job that he's doing based on the circumstances he was dealt with.
And I think the reason why people have such a hard time making the connection is that the majority of Americans probably really did not know how bad off we really were, how close to the edge we were falling over. I don't think the majority of Americans know that. And so when you're talking to someone and you're trying to get them to understand how close we were, I don't think they believe you because it wasn't presented to us that way. The media didn't really start talking about how bad off it was until much later, and by that time it was already bad. It had been bad off leading up to the election, let alone after he was elected. That whole summer, when all that was going on, we were so caught up in the pageantry of the election, we forget how high gas got at that point and all the different things that was going on. So I really think people really didn't know that we went in, you know, those previous years under President Bush, we had a surplus, and how deep that deficit became under his leadership. I don't think people really understood that.
Wow. So basically, my humble opinion, I thought he did an outstanding job overall, especially within the short period of time he was given. And so the State of the Union, again, I thought was delivered brilliantly. And I want to kind of draw your attention now to a specific component of the State of the Union speech, specifically his component in education. In fact, the part that I read of his speech was dealing strictly with the education. So I'm going to repeat a part of it. And in the speech he says, and so the question is whether all of us as citizens and as parents are willing to do what's necessary to give every child a chance to succeed. And so along those lines, I want to introduce another. First, let me get your comment on that. What do you think about his part of the education?
I thought it was absolutely wonderful and outstanding that we actually have a president that cares about the education of our children and wanting to make it accessible for all of our children, because that's what the law states. That's what Brown versus Topeka Board of Education was all about, was mm-hmm. to make it equal. And it has not been equal for a long time now. And it's great that we have a president that is addressing that. He may not say it in those words where people of color will realize he's fighting for them, but at the end of the day, that's exactly who he's fighting for, because we're the ones most of the time who's on the short end of the stick when it comes to having quality education.
So speaking of the opportunity to have quality education, there was an incident that happened this week or over the last few days or so where this woman, her name is Kelly Williams Bowler, tried to get her children an opportunity for better education by moving them in from one district to the other. And here's what the article says. And this was I got this from this is Roland Martin's comments that he made on CNN. He said that if you live in a crime-ridden neighborhood where your home was broken into a dozen times and the school your children were zoned was low performing, wouldn't you take drastic measures to ensure that they got a quality education? Well, that's exactly what Kelly Williams Bowler did, pulling her 12 and 16-year-old daughters out of the that school they attended in Akron, Ohio, and enrolling them in a suburban district where her father lived. Now, Willem Bowler used her father's address, where she allegedly lived part-time, but yet the Copeland-Fairlawn School District felt she was lying about her residence and hired a private eye to follow her, videotaping Williams Bowler's leaving her public housing home and dropping her children off at the suburban school. They confronted her, demanding that she repay the district $30,000, saying that she didn't have the right to have her daughters in the district she wasn't paying taxes in. When she refused, Williams Bowler was indicted on two felony charges, found guilty, and sentenced to 10 days in prison. Because of the felonies on her record, the aspiring school teacher would never be able to enter a classroom. Now, Jima, was this fair?
Well, no.
Now, and the reason why I asked you, on the backdrop of the fact that the State of the Union took place and the president emphasizing education, saying that it's a community responsibility and it's a parent's responsibility, and the parent in this particular instance saw that her children were not in a district where they were getting the best quality education, so she took it upon herself to try to do something about that, and then look what happened.
Correct. And then, you know, I have to question what made them decide that her kids were not in the right district. I mean, why follow her around? What led them to even question whether or not the kids were supposed to be there? I mean, you have all these underlying themes around this, and it goes back to things are not equal. And as a parent, you feel as though you have to do what you have to do, not only to protect your children, but to make sure your children have an adequate education. And I wonder, what was the cost of that education back in her own community? If it was $30,000 in the suburbs, how much was it costing down in her community?
Interesting. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And so the question I posed was about this particular situation, was it fair? Was it fair to pull those kids out of schools, to imprison their mother, and then more importantly, to charge her with a felony that would basically destroy any opportunity for her to really put herself in a position where she can provide quality education for her children?
Right, and that's why I hesitate in saying fair. It's probably not fair. But obviously that prosecutor thought it was enough of an offense to charge her with a crime, whereas, in my opinion, the school district itself ought to be charged with a crime for having such a disparaging in their education. So I think that it's a travesty that we're wasting, you know, tax dollars on this when I'm sure there's a real criminal out there. We're talking about Ohio, so Akron at that. There's so much going on out there that they could really be spending their private, and who paid for this private investigator? The school district, which is funded by who? So, I mean, you know, so we have discretionary funds now to go hire private investigators in our school districts. That's interesting. So, I mean, there's a lot of implications there. I'm not saying that we do things illegally, but you know, there has to be some point of understanding that all I wanted and all she wanted for her children was a quality education that she knew she wasn't going to be able to get in the area in which she resided. So there ought to be some sort of allowances. It wasn't hurting anybody. They was going to their grandfather's house. I mean, it wasn't like it was an abandoned house they was going to or a made-up address. It was a real place of residence that these people, that her children was assigned to. And I know, yeah, she could have moved out there. Maybe not. Maybe her dad didn't want her living there, but he didn't mind her kids. I mean, we never, all those other little nuances, but I think it's important that, you know, it's sad that that's the world we live in now, where we do have to make the stuff in order for our kids to get a quality education because it's still separate and it's not equal.
So in this case alone, there are so many levels of, I guess, that one could pose questions on. And what I mean by that, you know, one could say, you know, the fact that you mentioned the 30K in disparity in quality education in one school system as opposed to something I'm sure that was in close proximity of where she lived. Otherwise, she would not be able to commute, you know, quick enough to be able to get them in and out of school. So the disparity that exists in one school system as opposed to another. Then another component to this, another layer, if you will, is the prosecutorial component associated with this. What I mean by that is the fact that if you prosecute a mother that's trying to do right for her kids and trying to make sure that they get a quality education as we're trying to move in this right direction, but you charge her with a felony, not only a felony, but two counts that prevent her from moving forward in the future to at least be able to provide a higher quality education. And then the layer of the fact that, you know, you mentioned the fact about what about, you know, those kids? Why those kids? Why did they hire on taxpayer dollars a private investigator to go, you know, look at those kids? Now, I read somewhere in one of the articles that said that they were trying to do this and they were trying to make, make people know that this is something they're not going to tolerate and to make an example out of her, if you will. But do you think, looking at this on all levels, we'll start with the 30K of disparity. What do you think is going on there?
Well, I just want to know what kind of education they're getting for $30,000
per student, right?
That's the first thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whatever it is. I just want to know what kind of education that was. Everybody out there ought to be brilliant. number one, number two, as it relates to I just don't feel as though this was something that needed to be, she should have been charged as a criminal, definitely not a felony. And I don't know if it was because she wouldn't pay them back the money that then all of a sudden, you know, they're going to one-up her, we're going to arrest you. It's one thing to be arrested, another thing to be charged. But mm-hmm. It just seems as though this was a waste of time and money from the school district standpoint. They've wasted somebody's money, I'm sure, because it doesn't make sense. I really don't, you know, as you stated, the president states, community, parents, and here you have a parent who's trying to do right by her children, and this is what she gets. Now her future of trying to leave a legacy for her children is in jeopardy because of how this case has proceeded.
Right.
Hopefully they'll undo it and you know, make the charges go away or however they can do that, but I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, when it boils down to, it seems like everything boils down to money, right? And so that is one of the main reasons that our focus this year is on getting healthy physically and financially because, you know, truth of the matter is we live in a capitalistic society, you know. And, you know, we can talk about the Christianity parts and all we want to that we'll on Christian principles. But in America, there's a paradox going on when you're talking about capitalism versus Christianity. Because in Christianity, we talk about doing for the least of these. And when you have a case like this, when they're trying to get educated and she's doing everything she can to take them out of one situation to put them in another situation, yet she get hit with this law, and I put that in quotation, that says that she's unable to do that. And all she's trying to do is just trying to make her children have a better life. And so, again, this is the exact reason we have, we have our guest on today, Larry Johnson, talking about money. Because, I mean, money is very important. If you don't have it, and more importantly, if you don't use it properly and manage it properly, you're going to find yourself in these situations where you don't get a chance to realize the American dream. You know, and a few people are able to get through the cracks where they come to this country as immigrants and they do all this work hard and things of this nature. But for the masses of the American population, it takes that almighty dollar. So when we return, we're going to bring on Larry Johnson. And Larry Johnson is a senior partner at the Covenant Advisors, where he helps clients manage their assets. So hopefully over the next half hour, Larry Johnson will be able to give us a few pointers, and he will be able to educate us on how we can begin to obtain our financial freedom and financial wealth so we can make some good decisions. And then, you know, at the end of the day, we won't end up being in this situation. Be back in a moment.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our company's tailor-made training and consulting, current events, and Ask Jima can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for a discounted book for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Okay, welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Today, our very special guest is Larry Johnson. Now, Larry Johnson is a senior partner at Covenant Advisors, where he helps clients manage their assets using Christian biblical principles to live life more abundantly. He is also the editor-in-chief at the Facts Life Group, which is an online magazine at thefactslifegroup.com, where they promote how to manage their assets for individuals and families and making sound life decisions. Larry, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Patrick. How are you doing today?
Absolutely wonderful. So tell the millions of listeners out there on Blog Talk Radio a little bit about you and your business.
So I appreciate having you on the show today. I think you're doing your thing. You're doing an outstanding job. So thank you for having me here today to talk a little bit about what I do. And excited to talk about financial literacy today. Myself, I've been in the insurance and financial services industry for over a decade now, and been in various aspects from the corporate side to service to sales, and decided to venture out on my own to have my own business as a financial planner. And so using Christian principles, you know, I help clients manage their assets by focusing on how to live below your means, how to make sound investment decisions, how to essentially just manage your assets as you're growing them. And, you know, with that comes a lot of responsibility and a lot of questions and just a whole lot of ways to organize your assets in a way that can make your family be in a better position at the end of the day. So my job more or less is like a coach for my clients versus necessarily just telling them exactly what to do. I'm in the game to make sure they get where they need to get to, but also educate them along the way.
Okay. So, Larry, I'll tell you, I've been a professional for the last 20 years, and the first decade, I can tell you that I'm, originally from Alabama. I didn't have my family, wasn't well off, anything like that. They did, in my opinion, an outstanding job keeping that shielded from me. And so as an adult, however, I had kind of like no clue about – you know, all of the legal jargon or financial jargon, if you will, and what it really meant. For example, stocks, bonds, mutual funds, certificates of deposit, things of that nature. So I'm going to ask you to help bring, for the people that were like me coming out of high school, going to the military, going to college, that don't understand those terms, they kind of begin breaking those terms down and what they mean.
Well, first of all, I want to say that there's so much information out there today. What I'm going to say today is really nothing new. I mean, a lot of financial folks in the industry, the Susie Ormans out there that talk about all this information. So a lot of times these things are actually in the book. If folks can pick them up, but a lot of times people just don't have time or they're nervous about it. And also, you know, can I trust what somebody else is writing to me? You know, how do I know they're not trying to sell me something? How do I know their information is sound? And it really just takes a lot of reading to really understand about the capital monetary markets. Speaking specifically, there's really just two principles you need to understand.
Okay.
The first one is called diverse asset allocation. So you talked before about stocks, bonds, mutual funds, and CDs, or certificate of deposits.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take the first one, for example, stocks. Stocks is basically an investment into a company. So it's like you're an owner of a company, essentially. So you'll go out to some market somewhere, and you purchase shares in that company, and you're like actually like a part owner. And that partial ownership is based on how many stocks you buy in proportion of every other investor that's investing into that company. So stocks, or they call them equities, it used to be years ago one of the most risk-tolerant things you can invest in, but really today it's on the top tier, but nowhere near derivative securities, and we can talk about that if there's more time later.
Mm-hmm.
But stocks essentially are how you own part of a company. So it's high risk in terms of the main three asset allocation categories we're going to talk about. The next one is called bonds, which basically is essentially a debt instrument. And a bond, you're basically giving money to somebody else as an investment. They're going to give you a guaranteed return at some later point in time or throughout the year. So bonds are about debting. It's almost like similar to a mortgage, right? It's like a debting instrument. Somebody owes you money and promises a certain return throughout the year or when that particular bond matures. The last one or category is called cash equivalent securities, and that's where CDs fall into place, money market accounts. The objective of this particular asset is about liquidity, with the ability to convert the asset into cash quickly and to get your money back from that investment. So just how I mentioned it, stocks are the most high-risk thing you can do, bonds is the next level, and then cash equivalent securities is the lowest level of risk. And the other aspect of the main principles I was talking about was diversification, which is the ability to diversify your investments across, say, geographical barriers such as investing in companies here in the States versus investing in companies that are over in foreign lands such as China, or investing into different industries such as technology or the health sector. So the objective of using those two principles are to just not necessarily try to always beat the market or what they call it, the Dow is going or the NASDAQ. Your job is really just to make money based upon where you're trying to go with your goals. So typically, just in hindsight, the difference between an investor, but when you're younger, you take on a lot of risk because you can afford to make up the losses when they do occur in your portfolio. And when you're a lot older, you got to take those assets or pull from them for income. You're going to take less risk. You're going to be a little bit more conservative.
Outstanding. Man, that sounds like a lot of different language. It's almost like I have to take a whole college course to understand all of that, all of those different things you talked about. So you know what? Let's just say I'm not going to do anything. I'm just going to open up me a savings account and just dump my money in there. How come I just can't do that?
I mean, you can do it if you want to. I mean, you know, doing something is better than nothing. Don't have it in your mattress.
Okay.
But the reason why you don't want to put all your money into like a so-called safe investment, like, you know, a savings account, is the simple fact of inflation. Inflation is that thing, basically, essentially, the average price movements of all, well, not in the last 10 years, but typically most of the goods and services that are exchanged with inside of an economy. So it's that price differential. So for the last, almost 80 years, inflation has moved up on average 3% every year.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that your investments have to go above that amount. And typically CDs will guarantee you maybe 2, 3, 4%. And don't forget on top of that, you have to pay ordinary income tax. So typically if you invest into a savings account only, your money over the long term is getting eaten up by inflation. So when it comes time for you to retire or pull out those assets, they typically aren't even, you know, that valuable. There's money there, but it won't last you till you die. And that's the objective.
Oh, okay. So what I hear then is that I have all of these different investment options or vehicles, stocks, bonds, mutual funds, certificate of deposit. And basically there's a risk factor associated with each of those different ones I just talked about. And if I use something as, I guess, almost quote-unquote risk-free, like a savings account to draw interest on my money or to gain, to have my money work for money, over the long term, it seems like I lose money as opposed to gain money because of the inflation rate.
Absolutely.
Wow. Wow, that's interesting. Because I tell you that there's a lot of anxiety when it comes to managing money, specifically when we think that we can go out and put our money in a savings account and think that we're really, you know, making headway. But it sounds like we really need to be cognizant of these different type of investment vehicles to make sure we get the maximum amount of money for our dollar.
Absolutely. And a lot of times, I mean, really, that's what, to me, an advisor should be for. I mean, a lot of times, thank God for the financial reform, we're going to see a lot of changes. Just kind of talk about that briefly. They, as a result of that reform and some changes within the Securities Exchange Commission or the SEC, there are typically three ways that people get paid in this industry that are people in my position. There are people who get paid off commissions. Mm-hmm. And I sell your product based upon the commission rate structure or, you know, the return as far as, you know, you buying that product, I get some money off that product based on the products you buy from me. And some have higher or lower commissions based on what I sell you. You have the other extreme, which is what I do is fee only. So I only get paid off the advice I give my clients. So whether they buy a mutual fund, a stock, a house, it doesn't matter to me. My job is to help them reach their goals, and there's an incentive for me to do so because if I'm not performing as an advisor, then they're going to fire me pretty quickly. And the other type of way to get paid is called fee-based, which is a mix of commission as well as getting paid off a fee only. That could be hourly or that could be a flat fee based upon a service you get from an advisor. And so broker-dealers, people in the investment side, they typically get paid off of commissions. And they until the financial reform, didn't have what's called a fiduciary responsibility. So you had a lot of folks who could sell your product and not necessarily have that product be in line with your overall investment goals. Their job is to give you the prospectus or the document that explains the investment and to really just talk about, hey, this is what this investment is about. Do you want it? That was to the extent of really how they would sell you those products. And that's going to change. And so I think, you know, when you have an advisor next to you who's giving you objective advice, it helps. And so, I mean, the advice can range from a couple hundred dollars to, you know, thousands, depending upon how complex your situation may be. And I think definitely getting somebody who really understands, you know, how the capital monetary markets work that can do it in an objective way is going to be a good counterpart that you can have for your entire financial life cycle.
Wow. Okay, so there's another option. Here I am. I just got employed by this Fortune 500 company. I like what I'm doing, and they have this thing they call – employee stock options, or they may have a 401k. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, those and are they beneficial? Should I get in them or what?
Yeah, you know, just kind of taking a step back, there, when it comes to employers, there are two general ways of how employers can set up investment options or retirement benefits for the employees. The first type of plan is called a defined benefit pension plan, and essentially it puts responsibility on the employer to make sure you reach your investment goals. So really, your money doesn't necessarily follow the business cycles, and you don't take on a lot of risk. It's all about the company taking on the risk. So they guarantee you a benefit when you retire, and not necessarily an amount. So they guarantee you you're going to have, you know, a certain percentage of your salary in the bank based upon how many years of service you have with that company. So it puts the onus back on them to make sure you get where you need to get with your investment goals. And by the way, these investments are actually backed by the federal government to a certain extent. So if the pension plan underperforms or there's some liquidity problems or there's some solvency issues, then the actual federal government will stand in and actually help take over that plan to make sure you get something for your investment. And that's actually not typical for what I'm going to talk about next, which is defined contribution plans. And those are plans where essentially you as the employee have the responsibility to make the investment decisions. These can be in the form of 401Ks, 403Bs, and also what you talked about, you know, stock option plans based on the company's, you know, goals as you being an employee. And, you know, a lot of employees, I think, don't really talk a lot about stock options. They don't know how to talk about them. And so typically stock options are given to key employees, or what they call highly compensated employees, people who make a significant contribution to the company, and the company wants to actually give you an incentive to keep performing well. And they give you these things called stock options that allows you to exercise them at a later point in time. There are two types of stock options. There are stock owner plans, and there are stock bonus plans. And essentially, each of these plans, they vary, but essentially the objective of both of these type of plans are for you to get a certain amount of shares from the company at a certain point in time, and you can exercise those shares at a later point in time. So the reason why this is beneficial over a typical plan like a 401k is the fact that when you take distributions off your 401k, because you're doing tax-deferred money, you're going to be taxed on that money at ordinary income, right, or your basic tax rate, essentially, when you take that money off as a distribution. Whereas we talk about some type of plans, when you take that distribution off those plans, you're actually getting taxed at a capital gains rate, which is significantly lower than the regular ordinary income tax rate. So I think a lot of people just don't have that conversation when they get a new job to even ask, you know, are there stock options? Because I think it's a question worth asking. If the employer says no, that's fine, but at least you ask before you accept a position or start negotiating what your salary was going to be. Because a lot of times it's in your best financial incentive or you know, decision to essentially put that money off for later use. So if there's a way you can reduce your income today by taking a capital gains distribution later on, that is going to significantly boost your retirement income.
Wow. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Today, my very special guest is Larry Johnson. Larry Johnson is a senior partner at Covenant Advisors, where he helps clients manage their assets using Christian biblical principles to live life more abundantly. He is also the editor-in-chief at the Facts Life Group, which is an online magazine at factslifegroup.com. So, Larry, I have a confession, and my confession is simply this. When, you know, here I am, you know, somewhere between 30 and 50 years old, somewhere, I ain't going to say which spectrum, but for the most part, I have, you know, I'm trying to live my best life now. And so, you know, I've put money away. In fact, I talked about the fact earlier this year that I was going to try to start paying out bills. I've been able to pay off two of my worst bills. So now I'm moving in the direction of saving some money. But my focus right now is really not on me anymore. It's on my little one, my little son. And the reason why I say that is because I know coming out of my neighborhood, and I kind of started out in the negative. And what I mean by starting out in the negative is that, you know, we didn't have any savings for me. I didn't have any this amount of income that I could start with. And by, you know, going or buying my first car or buying my first home, I was already in debt. So I don't want to leave that burden to my children, to my son. And so in order for me to be able to kind of help them be above the fray as opposed to being behind the fray when they're 18 years old, what are some of the things that I can do now while he's 3, 4, and 5 years old that will prepare him for when he's 18?
You know, I think that's a great question. I mean, I could answer that a thousand different ways, but I think, you know, like you said, you're really speaking that you're implicitly saying it happens in the home. And I think that just like, you know, you learn how, people in general is what I mean by you, you learn how to make certain decisions as far as what the latest fashion is and the latest cars that are out and all these other things. I mean, you learn those bad habits over time. I mean, it's a learned behavior. It's not that somebody just told you, you know, this is the hottest thing. You learned it over time, how to make bad decisions and spend money that you don't have. And I think as a child, you know, parents should teach your children how to make good financial decisions. And it really starts with a simple concept, just having a few buckets of jars. We have it for our kids as well. And you give your kid, for example, let's say $1. You know, we'll start with $1 as a simple case. And maybe you'll break it up into 10 cents each, you know, break that dollar down to 10 dimes. And, you know, you'll talk to your son or your daughter, you'll tell them, you'll say, well, when the person that will do, based upon, you know, what your value system is in your home, in our home, will say, you know, we'll give 10% of our dollar to charitable contributions or to those who are in need. Mm-hmm. And then maybe we'll take another 20 or 30 cents and we'll say we're going to take this next 20 or 30 cents and we're going to pay ourselves first, son, and we're going to put this into our savings or our investment category. And that will leave me with maybe 60 or 70 cents. And with that additional money, then I can spend that money on what I desire to spend it on. And you do that over and over and over with the child. By the time a child is in middle school, high school, and they're getting money every time from their grandparents at birthdays and holidays and those kind of things, these kids are picking up these behaviors of how to have to make good financial decisions. So by the time that they get to college, you know, they understand, you know, that they don't go out and get credit cards and they don't go out and buy frivolous things that aren't going to add value. And when they start with their first job, they're starting out in the positive. So instead of getting furniture on credit, buying cars on credit, they're paying for all those things in cash. And I even told a young man once, he was probably 20 years old, he was making about $40K working several different jobs. And I told him if he puts away $16,500 a year when he starts his, right now while he's working, which is basically the maximum amount you can put away into a qualified plan such as a 401K if your employer offers it, I told him he'd be done saving for retirement by the time he was 30. So even, say, for example, I started at 30 or whatever, you know, I'm not saying I did, but say I did start at 30 for investing, even if I saved $16,000 a year from 30 until I was 65, he would still beat me, even though he only put money in for 10 years, and I put money in for 35 years. And it's all about time value of money. The more time you invest into yourself, into your assets, the more of a greater return it's going to give you down the road.
So it seems like there were two lessons there. One is that you show them the value of money early on, just like you would teach them about table manners, just like you would teach them about, you know, how to clean up their room. So a part of that teaching should also be a financial component in the home, along with those other values that we teach on an everyday basis. And then
Absolutely.
The second thing I hear is that when you talk about the dollar, and in so many cases, I hear people manage their money based on 100% of the dollar, as opposed to that 60 to 70% of the dollar in which they should be managing to. For example, you gave the analogy of having a dime put away for charitable contributions, maybe another 20% for themselves, for their investment strategy. But that 60 to 70% that's remaining should be what they calculate as far as what they have available for those other needs. But what I hear and see in so many other cases is that people use that 100% to do all of their managing. And so, therefore, when you come up short, you come up short by a long shot as opposed to having that cushion there. That was a great value.
And let me interrupt. It's not 100%. It used to be 120%. So people used to be spending more than they actually had. We had a negative savings rate. So, you know, now we got a positive, but we thank God for the Great Recession. But, you know, they've been spending more than 100% of their income for quite some time. It's the American way.
Now, I have one. We have about 10 minutes remaining before the end of the show. And so I want to give you a moment to kind of, you know, tell people how they can get in contact with you. You know, what are the type of services that you can provide? You know, people are going to be listening to this around the world. And so what's your web address? All of that vital information that they can get from you to be able to contact you today so they can start saving money.
Well, you know, whether it's me or somebody else that can help them out, as long as they get help, it's honestly fine with me. I believe, you know, if you have a trusted person, you know, in your community that you can talk to, you know, definitely do that. If they're a trusted person, I mean, even though someone says they're in the insurance and financial services industry, they may just sell you life insurance and you may need a budget. So, you know, if you have a trusted person, if you understand how they get paid, that's the key, ask them how they get paid. And if they're not willing to share that with you, then walk them to the next person. But, you know, for me, I'm willing to help any and everyone who wants to talk to me. I deal with a variety of clients from low-income, middle-income to high-net-worth, high-income individuals. And so, you know, you can get a hold of me at my website at factslifegroup.com. That's factslifegroup.com. And also you can check out covenantadvisorsplanning.com as well. And I have a business partner there I work with as well. And if you are interested in talking further about your specific situation, my lines of communication are open. So you go on our website, you know, the Facts Life Group, and there's a contact section. Just hit contact, and someone will be sure to get back to you. Or go to, again, covenantadvisorsplanning.com as well, and we'll get a hold of you there as well.
You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Today, our very special guest is Larry Johnson. Larry Johnson is a senior partner at Covenant Advisors, where he helps clients manage their assets using Christian biblical principles to live life more abundantly. He is also the editor-in-chief at the Facts Life Group, which is an online magazine. And you can reach that magazine at factslifegroup.com. Again, that's FactsLifeGroup.com. Larry, I really appreciate you joining us today. It has been a pleasure. You have taught me a whole lot in the last 30 minutes or so than I have, in a whole semester of college. So I really can't thank you enough for stopping by to join us today.
Appreciate you for always having me. And, if any questions people have, that they send it to you and they want to get a hold of me, just forward me those requests, and I'll get back to them as soon as possible. But I appreciate the work that you're doing. I think that, this is the kind of platform we need in our community. I mean, it's about sparking dialogue and talking about important issues. And as you know and I know, the reason why you're doing this is because, you don't want to give a filtered-down message about what's going on in the media. I mean, you're a very bright individual, and I've known you for quite some time. And you do your homework and make sure, what you're talking about is correct and accurate. And this is where people can get some good information about how to manage their life in various respects, from being politically aware to, like you talk about, the finances, to how to manage your career. And I think you're doing an outstanding job and keep this platform going, because I think this is good, solid information with no ulterior motive, but to get a good, sounding board in the community about the issues that are going on today.
I really appreciate that. We do have a moment to take a call?
Do I have a moment?
Yeah, do you have a moment to take a call?
Yes,
we're going to go to our phone lines real quick before the end of the show and take a call. Caller 7781, you're on the line. You're on Current Events with Patrick Cook.
Yes, I have a general question. Hello?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, it was mentioned by Mr. Johnson that stocks were high-risk accounts. And so I was wondering if I put some money into a company that was well-known, maybe like a Walmart or a Google, hypothetically speaking, would that still be considered high risk when they're such well-known, highly established companies?
Well, caller, thank you again for the question. That's a great question. I mean, I think, talking about earlier, if you invest into a company like a Walmart, I mean, in terms of stocks, bonds, and cash equivalent securities, that is the highest risk in those particular asset classes. And the reason being is because you're buying one type of security. And unless you have other securities in your portfolio to offset, that particular stock or investment, you can be overly saturated in that one particular stock. So you essentially would be following the business cycles of Walmart, which you don't want to do. You want to follow the business cycles of the market in general. So, if you want to, say, manage your own portfolio, you don't want to buy mutual funds, which are basically a collection of other securities such as stocks or bonds, any even cash equivalent securities, you could buy other individual stocks that can offset that. So, without getting too technical, when you're buying different securities, your objective is to find what's called negative correlation, and that's a very detailed term. But essentially, it's like this analogy I always use. It's like, say you're investing into an umbrella company, right? So obviously when it rains, the umbrella company sells a lot of umbrellas. But also it makes sense for you to invest into a company that maybe sells sunscreen. So obviously when it's sunny outside, the sunscreen company does well in terms of the opposite of the umbrella company. So your objective is to buy companies that offset each other. So if Walmart is doing well, maybe some of the other companies in your portfolio are not doing so well, and vice versa, when Walmart is not doing well, you have your other investments that are doing well. So Walmart would be a high-risk investment. That's the only security you held. I would encourage you to either get a mutual fund, or if you are comfortable managing your own fund, find other industries or companies that follow the business cycles of Walmart.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. I was also wondering, as far as you mentioned the 60 to 70% of saving, I thought I saw in a newspaper article or so I was reading online where you should save probably 12% of your income. Do you agree with that? Because it sounds like you were saying you should save much more than that base 12%.
I think you should save as much of your income as possible. I think you should identify first what your budget is. I mean, the guidelines are fine just to go by, just to see, you know, if you're in a bad situation, how to pull yourself out of the bootstraps and kind of have a, say you're not saving any money, just maybe start setting goals up for yourself and maybe save 5% and go to 10%. But I suggest saving as much as possible because, you know, the days of the employer guaranteeing your retirement income, the days of the federal government guaranteeing your retirement income, those days are over, and your responsibility is all on you. So if you can find an optimal way to live below your means with your just call it discretionary income every month, you know, then after that I would start saving and investing as much as possible, and I wouldn't put a limit on it. I would just go as high as it can go in terms of, you know, what you can afford not to consume today and putting those consumption expenditures off for tomorrow.
Okay, wonderful, wonderful, wonderful information. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you, caller. All right, well, that concludes our show for today. Larry, again, I cannot thank you enough. You are doing an outstanding job, man. I love you. I appreciate you joining us today. And hopefully we get a chance to do this again.
Absolutely. Well, you give me a call. I'm one beep away.
Okay. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern, where we showcase small businesses, churches, entrepreneurs, and nonprofits. Remember to join us next week, Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time. And don't forget to bookmark this site. Visit my blog at TaylorMade101.com. Until next time, remember, it is written, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. So stay engaged, stay informed, and stay plugged in to Current Events with Patrick Cook.